Chapter 3. Flight and Fight. Cuthwyn loosed between breaths, his goose-feathered shaft thudding home at the base of the goblin's skull. It toppled from the back of the wolf with a surprised squeal. He drew another arrow from the quiver at his shoulder and sent it through the throat of a wolf-riding goblin. One of the riderless beasts leapt onto the wagons, bloody saliva dripping from its jaws. It pounced onto one of the dwarfs armed with a thunder bow and bore him to the ground. Yellowed fangs fastened on the dwarf's neck and blood fountained as the beast bit through his throat. Cuthwyn's next arrow punched through its eye socket, and the beast dropped next to its victim with a howl of agony. The goblins either didn't realize they were under attack from a different direction or didn't care. A flurry of ragged arrows flew from the goblin bows. Most thudded harmlessly into the timber sides of the wagons, but a dwarf fell with two shafts buried in his chest. The wolf-riding goblins were quick to take advantage of the situation, two of their number goading their mounts to leap onto the wagons. Swinging his bow around, Cuthwyn's arrow slashed into the flank of the first wolf, his next into the hind quarters of the other. The dwarfs fell upon the downed goblins and slew them with quick, economical blows from their axes. A shot rang out from the dwarf with a thunder bow, and another goblin was punched from the saddle. Cuthwyn exhausted his quiver, emptying another four saddles and killing three wolves. He set his bow upright against the tree next to him and drew his hunting knife, a foot of cold steel that had shed more than its fair share of greenskin blood. Two more dwarfs were down, one with an arrow protruding from his neck, another with a goblin blade buried in his guts. The thunder bow spoke again, and a goblin died with half its head blown off. Cuthwyn ran down to the road and leapt on the back of a wolf, plunging his blade into the goblin rider's side. The creature shrieked in agony, and he hurled its corpse to the ground. He rammed his bloody blade into the wolf's back. It howled and rolled, trying to dislodge him. He landed lightly beside it and stabbed its throat as it scrambled to get upright. Another wolf landed on him, the claws of its front paws scoring his thigh and barreling him to the ground. Cuthwyn rolled as its fangs snapped for his throat. He threw up his knife arm and hammered its jaw with a pommel. Yellow teeth snapped beneath the empire-forged iron, and the stinking beast threw back its head and roared. One of the dwarfs dropped to the road and ran towards him, but a goblin with better aim or luck than most loosed a shaft that sliced home into his rescuer's neck. The dwarf sank to his knees, blood pumping in a flood down his mail shirt. He pitched forward as the goblin turned its bow on Cuthwyn. A thunderous boom echoed across the clearing, and the last goblin fell from the back of its wolf, with what passed for its brains mushrooming from its skull. Cuthwyn rolled to his feet as the wolves, free of their cruel master's spurs and goads, fled into the forest, leaving the clearing silent, save for the laboured wheezes of wounded beasts. Cuthwyn's leg ached, but the cuts were not deep. He scrambled over to the wagons, checking each of the dwarfs in turn. Only one still lived, the dwarf who'd fired the shot that had saved his life. An arrow was lodged in his chest, its shaft warped and crudely fletched with what looked like raven feathers. The dwarf's beard was twisted into three heavy braids, each bound with an iron band at the end, and his cheeks were black with powder burns. The dwarf was bald, his heavy brow pulled down in pain. Blood flecked his spittle, and his eyes were glassy and unfocused. "You're hurt," said Cuthwyn, "pretty badly, but if I can get you to Reichdorf, you might live." The dwarf looked at him in pained confusion and murmured something in a strange, angular language of harshly edged words. Cuthwyn didn't understand and shook his head. "I don't know what you're saying. Do you understand me?" The dwarf nodded slowly, grim-faced and belligerent.
"My fellows," he said.
"They're all dead." The dwarf nodded, and Cuthwyn saw a depth of pain and anger that frightened him with its intensity. He had felt sorrow at the death of friends, but this was a different order of feeling entirely. "Were they your kin?" he asked, helping the dwarf to sit upright.
"All dwarfs are kin," hissed the dwarf, as though he was being willfully dense.
"Sorry I asked," replied Cuthwyn. "Now hold still. I need to get that arrow out, and it's going to hurt." The dwarf looked down at the jutting shaft and said,
"Don't tell me it will hurt, manling. Just do it before I die of old age." "Suit yourself," said Cuthwin. "I'm going to count to three, and then..." He jerked the arrow out in one swift motion. The dwarf roared in agony and swung his fist at Cuthwin's head. He'd been expecting that and swayed back from the blow. Blood pumped from the wound, and the dwarf's eyes rolled back as the pain threatened to overwhelm him. "Stay with me, Mountain Man," said Cuthwin, holding the dwarf upright. "Come on, look at me. Listen to me. You have to stay awake or you're as good as dead. There's likely more of those goblins out there, and it won't take them long to get here on those wolves. So you need to come with me if you want to get back beneath the mountains." The dwarf gripped the edge of the wagon, and it seemed as though his anger alone was sustaining him. Cuthwin turned to cut strips of cloth from one of the dead dwarf's cloaks to bind the wounds. The dwarf watched him and said,
"What is your name, manling?"
"I'm Cuthwin of the Unbarogan," he said.
"The Helden Hammer's type,"
said the dwarf, the hard edges of his voice softening with blood loss and fatigue. "The very same," said Cuthwin, binding the dwarf's wound as best he could. He would have preferred to lace the wound with healing poultices, but they were in his pack. "And you, what's your name, Mountain Man?"
"Deeplock," said the dwarf, his voice already sounding distant and faint. "Grindan Deeplock of Zufbar, engineer to the guildmasters of Varndras, keeper of the..."
The dwarf's voice faded, and the ragged howling of wolves from further south told Cuthwin it was time to move on. Slinging the dwarf's arm over his shoulder, he set off towards where he'd set his bow and hoped he could put enough distance between him and the goblins before they were able to pick up his tracks.
"Wait," said Deeplock. "Must bring..."
"No time, Mountain Man," said Cuthwin, half carrying, half dragging the wounded dwarf into the shadows of the forest. Were it only the larger greenskins behind them, Cuthwin wouldn't have been worried. They were strong, but not too clever. But goblins were cunning and would find their tracks swiftly. On his own, he could evade them without trouble, but with a wounded dwarf in tow, that was going to be a challenge.
"Hand me the tongs, son," said Govanen, squinting in the smouldering orange light of the forge. His hand grasped air until Bison placed the warm metal in his hands.
The furnace was a blaze of light before him, the roar of its heat and the hiss of water droplets from the powered wheel that worked the bellows acting as a sounding guide for him as he thrust the tongs into the hot coals. Govanen felt the metal and clamped it hard, drawing it out and placing it upon the anvil. The stink of hot iron burned the air, and its orange-yellow colour told him it was just right. His sight was all but destroyed, but his sense for the metal was just as strong.
"Looks good, Da," said Bison. "Forging heat right enough."
"Oi, I can tell, lad,"
nodded Govanen, handing his son the tongs and feeling on the workbench for his fuller. Its curved walnut grip slipped into his hand, and he hefted it to get the weight right before bringing it down in a short, powerful arc onto the iron bar. He struck several blows, swiftly establishing a working rhythm as Bison turned the bar and drew it out, gradually lengthening the metal. They'd done the hard work earlier, working with strikers and other apprentices to work the cold lump of iron into a long bar from which to shape the blade. It was to be the sword of the Empire's Grand Knight, for Alfgeir had earned great accolades in his defence of the realm in the Emperor's absence.
"Turn it again," said Govanen, "once with each strike."
"Aye, Da," said Bison. "Once each, aye, Da, like you say."
Govanen worked the fuller along the length of the iron, working by instinct and earned skill. The bar was a blurred outline of yellow gold before him, and he could only tell Bison was turning the bar by the sound of the hot metal scraping on the anvil. Counting his strokes, he had judged the iron to be the right length. He had taken Alfgeir's measurements and tested the weight and balance of his currently favoured blade before laying a hammer to the metal. The Grand Knight of the Empire preferred a weapon with the weight slightly towards the tip, requiring a stronger arm to wield it, but delivering a more powerful blow when it landed. The ore that formed this sword had come from the mines of the Howling Hills, Cherusenland, which meant it was freer from impurities and should produce a blade of great brilliance.
"Look long enough?" he asked.
"Aye, Da," said Bison. "Just right, Da."
Govanen wiped a meaty forearm across his brow, blinking away salty beads of sweat as they dripped into his eye. Just for a second, he could see the outline of his son clearly, a giant of a boy, 19 summers old, but with the mind of a child. Grief and guilt welled in the smith's heart. It had been at Blackfire when everything had changed. Govanan and Bison had been fighting in the heart of the Unbarogan lines, smashing greenskins down with powerful strokes of their iron-headed forge hammers. After hours of fighting, the day was almost won, and the warriors of the Emperor's army were hot and close to exhaustion. Victory was so close they could almost touch it, and that alone kept them fighting beyond the limits of endurance. A shadow fell over their sword band, and an abominable stench rose up as a monstrous, rugose-skinned troll crashed into their flank. Taller than three men and growling with a throaty roar of idiot hunger, it swung a tree branch as thick as an oaken beam. Six men were bludgeoned to death with a single blow. Many ran from its horror, but Govanan and Bison stood firm, their hammers feeling woefully inadequate to face such a towering mass of muscle and fury. Warriors rallied to their side, for they were men much respected amongst the Unbarogan, and together they charged the hideous creature. Its leering grin split apart in a mass of broken teeth and half-chewed flesh, but it was not in anticipation of feeding. A burbling heave spasmed through its stomach, and a caustic flood of acidic bile spewed from its wide mouth. Govanan was one of the lucky ones. Leading the charge, he was spared the agony of being eaten alive by the deadly acid. His helmet took the brunt of the splash, but after 3 hours of fighting in the punishing heat, he'd pushed the visor up. Droplets of the viscous stomach bile dripped into his eyes, and the fiery agony as it burned into them was the worst pain in the world. He remembered Bison leaping to face the hideous beast. Its heavy club had smashed him to the ground and left him lying with his skull caved in like a broken egg. That had been the end of their battle. And the next Govanan had known was days later when he awoke in the surgeon's tents at the mouth of the pass. Bright light hurt his eyes, and only the dimmest outline of shapes and contrasts were visible to him. Though his sword brother, Orvad, had splashed water into his face moments after his wounding, the damage was done. His sight was virtually gone. Orvad died later in the battle, but with the help of one of the surgeon's runners, Govanan had sought news of his son. It took 2 days to find him among the thousands of wounded, and though he still lived, the lad left the better portion of his brain in the dusty sand of the pass. Govanan could not weep, his eyes ruined by the beast venom, but he sat with his son until they were set upon wagons for the journey back to Reichdorf. Black fire had taken away his sight and his son's mind, but there wasn't a day went by he wasn't glad he had stood in the line and faced the greenskin horde.
"Da," said Bison. "What's the matter, Da?"
Govanan snapped out of his melancholy, squinting through the gloom at the blurred outline of his son. He held the sword metal in the tongs, and Govanan shook his head at his foolishness. The metal had cooled too far to work and would need to be reheated. That was careless, for the quality of the blade would suffer after too many reheats.
"Nothing, son," said Govanan. "Let's get this metal heated up, or this sword will be no better than a greenskin club."
"Aye, da," grinned Bison. "Heat it up, aye. Heat it good."
The metal was thrust into the fire, and the process began again. Govanan watched the seething glow, wishing for the thousandth time that he'd kept his visor lowered.
"Damn you for a fool," he whispered, the words lost in the roaring of the furnace.
They were getting close now. Too close. Cuthwin moved as fast as he could with the injured dwarf stumbling alongside him. He bore the bulk of Deeplock's weight, which was slowing him down and making it much harder to keep their pass in secret. The forest had closed in, thick and ideal for getting lost in, but Cuthwin had travelled this way many times. The forest was a harsh companion, a friend to those who understood its rhythms, a deadly enemy to those who didn't give it the proper respect. Cuthwin knew how to make his way in the wilderness, but the goblins were equally at home in its shadowed depths. Their pursuers were at best a mile behind. The wind carried the yapping barks of the wolves, and though Cuthwin tried to angle his course so that it wouldn't carry a scent to them, it was proving to be impossible. He kept to the hard-packed earth and stony ground where he could, wading through shallow streams and leaving false trails to throw their pursuers. That had bought him time but hadn't shaken the goblins. He'd stopped every now and then to give the wounded dwarf a rest, and had used the time to set traps on their back trail. At least one snare had caught a wolf. He'd heard its plaintive cry of pain. The breath heaved in his lungs, and he knew he couldn't run much further. At some point soon, he'd have to turn and fight. There hadn't been time to pluck his arrows from the goblin and wolf corpses, but his retrieved pack had a spare quiver with a dozen arrows. He didn't want to face the goblins and their wolves with only his bow and hunting knife, so any ambush would have to be planned carefully. Cuthwin looked up through the high branches of the tangled canopy, trying to judge how far it was to the river. He could hear the distant sound of it, and its cold, clear scent was a crisp tang over the mulchy greenness of the forest. If they were going to get away from these creatures, he'd need to have plotted their course correctly. Deep Lock stumbled and almost dragged Cuthwin down with him. "Up, mountain man," he hissed. "Use those damn legs of yours."
"Muskubak," gasped the dwarf,
and Cuthwin saw there was blood in his beard. "Not if you want to live," he said, hauling the dwarf to his feet. Deep Lock muttered something else, but Cuthwin couldn't make it out. He set off again through the trees, but the dwarf fell before they'd managed 10 yards. Cuthwin fell with him, rolling to keep his bow from touching the ground.
"Damn you, but your trouble," he hissed.
The sound of a howling wolf drifted through the trees. It was east of him, and another answered it, this time to the west. There would be more behind him, at least 4, and he knew they were racing to get ahead of him, to close the circle around him and leave him nowhere to run. How far away were they? Listening to the echoes through the trees, he guessed they were no more than 1/2 mile from him. He cursed and gripped the dwarf's tunic, hauling him over his shoulder.
"Ulrich's balls, but you're heavy," he told the unconscious dwarf.
Though much shorter than Cuthwin, the dwarf was at least as heavy as a tall man. Bowed under the dwarf's weight, Cuthwin set off again, following the building swell of river noise, hoping that he'd emerge from the trees where he'd planned. He ran on, sweat dripping into his eyes, losing track of time and distance as he fought to keep going. At last, he saw a break in the trees and heard the rushing sound of falling water. Despite his exhaustion, he smiled, knowing the forest had steered him true. The sound of wolves was louder now. They knew they had him cornered and were howling to get the fear pumping in his veins.
"We'll see about that," he hissed,
emerging from the trees onto the banks of a fast-flowing tributary of the Reich. Tumbling from the high peaks of the grey mountains, it wended its way through the uplands of the forest, gathering speed as it fed into the basin of the fertile southlands of the Empire. Perhaps 50 yards wide, the river poured northwards in a tumbling froth of white spume and swirling black pools. The riverbed was only 1 yard or so down, but it would take all his strength to keep his feet against the speed of the water. Greasy rocks slicked in moss jutted from the river as it widened towards a crashing waterfall. A glittering rainbow arced over the edge of the drop, the water falling to a wide pool of upthrust rocks far below. Cuthwin set down his burden, leaning the dwarf against a boulder at the side of the river. His pallor was terrible, and Cuthwin doubted that even the best healers in Reichdorf could save him. To be killed rescuing a dwarf that likely wouldn't live out the day, that would be a poor way to meet his end. Heavy tree branches drooped over the water, willows, whip-limbed birch and young, supple saplings. Cuthwin shucked off his pack. He strung his bow and unsheathed his hunting knife, moving quickly to the tree line and testing the longest and thinnest tree branches. A wolf howl came from the forest, and Cuthwin knew he didn't have much time. Sweating and breathing hard, Cuthwin looped Grindan Deeplock over his shoulders and waded back into the river. Swollen with mountain water, it was bitterly cold and the breath caught in his throat. It threatened to snatch him from his feet and send him hurtling over the waterfall. But, thanks to the additional ballast of the dwarf, Cuthwin was able to keep his balance. He waded out into the river, biting his lip to keep the pain of the cold at bay. 12 yards to his right, the waterfall boomed and roared like a hungry beast, and he tried not to think of how much it would hurt to be dashed to death on the rocks below. He reached the halfway point of the river, shuffling his feet through the mud and stones of the riverbed. Just ahead of him was a jutting boulder, its surfaces worn smooth by the passage of centuries of water. He slid Deeplock from his shoulders and propped him up against the rock, pressing his own back into the dwarf to hold him in place. The wolves emerged from the trees, 7 of them, each with a goblin perched behind the blades of their shoulders, Chittering laughter giggled from beneath the goblins' hoods, and hooked noses twitched in anticipation. They spat curses at him in their foul language, and many lifted their short horn bows from their backs. Cuthwin pulled back on his own bowstring and let fly, sending an arrow into the mouth of a snarling wolf and dropping it instantly. The goblin fell from its back and plunged into the waters of the river. It squealed in fear before being carried over the waterfall. The roar of the water swallowed its cries. Four of the wolves entered the river, the flesh of their jaws drawn back over their fangs. A black, fletched shaft skittered off the rock, and Cuthwin flinched, swinging his bow around and sighting down the length of his arrow. He exhaled and loosed, watching the arrow as it slashed through the air to sever the thin knot of bound saplings he'd wedged in the soft earth before the bent branches of a long-limbed willow. Its branches whipped around like the arm of a catapult laid on its side and slashed into the wolf-riding goblins. Two of the wolves in the shallows were smashed from their feet and howled as they were swept downriver towards the falls. They and their riders vanished over the edge, and as the other goblins watched in dismay, Cuthwin knocked and let fly with another arrow. It punched to the chest of the goblin, whose wolf had leapt back quick enough to avoid his trap. Another goblin arrow spun up to slice the skin of his forehead. Blood streamed down Cuthwin's face, and he shook his head clear as the remaining four wolves leapt into the river, their lean bodies powering them through the water as the goblins held on for dear life. Cuthwin waited until they were a dozen yards from him and sent his next shaft into a branch he'd wedged beneath a precariously perched boulder further upriver. His arrow thwacked into the wood, but the branch didn't move. The wolves snapped in the foaming water, and Cuthwin saw their feral hunger to tear him apart. He loosed another shaft into the wood, and this time it fell from where it was wedged into the soft mud he'd dug out of the riverbed. The boulder toppled over, and the water breaking behind it surged downriver with tidal force. The wave slammed into the wolves and broke against them with enormous power. They were helpless against the strength of the current, and all but two were borne over the edge of the falls by the surging water. Their howls and the screeching fear of the goblins dwindled as they fell. Before he could congratulate himself, a goblin arrow ricocheted from the rock and sliced through his bowstring. Cuthwin took hold of his now useless bow and hurled it towards the far bank. It was a good throw, and the weapon landed in the ferns at the edge of the river. He couldn't move from the rock for fear of losing Grindan Deeplock, so drew his knife and prepared to fight the last two of his pursuers. The wolf was fighting against the current, and before he could reach him in his sheltered enclave, Cuthwin lunged forward. Keeping one hand braced against the dwarf, he slashed his blade across the wolf's snout as the goblin swung its sword at him. The beast yelped in pain, and the goblin's sword went wide. Cuthwin plunged the tip of his dagger into the rider's throat. Blood spilled over his hand, and the goblin lurched back, yanking hard on the rope reins of its mount. The creature's pain outweighed its sense of danger, and the power of the river eagerly snatched it away. The last wolf had entered the river higher up and used the flow of the water to its advantage. Swimming with a current, it lunged towards him. He hurled himself back against the rock, and its jaws snapped shut an inch from his face. The goblin stabbed with his trusty blade. Cuthwin swayed aside, and Grindan Deeplock slid away from him, his head sinking beneath the level of the rushing water. Cuthwin punched the wolf in the face and rammed his knife into the goblin's side. Both tumbled away from him, and he twisted the dagger in the greenskin's flesh, pulling it out and stabbing it down into the wolf's skull. Its yelp of pain was abruptly cut off, and the corpses spun lazily away, disappearing over the edge of the waterfall. Cuthwin let out a long breath and turned to lift the dwarf from beneath the water. His eyes were closed, and it was impossible to tell if he were alive or dead. Checking the tree line for more enemies, Cuthwin hauled Grindan Deeplock over to the far side of the river and dragged him onto the bank. He pressed his fingertips to the dwarf's throat and was rewarded with a pulse, weak but steady. Cuthwin's pack was sodden, but the oiled lining had kept the worst of the river at bay. Stripping the dwarf of his sodden clothes, he wrapped him in a woolen blanket from his pack and rubbed circulation back into his limbs. "Just as well you're unconscious, mountain man," said Cuthwin. "Don't think you'd be keen on me doing this for you." Satisfied the dwarf wasn't about to die from the cold, Cuthwin swiftly redressed his wounds, using a healing poultice of valerian and spider leaf and binding them with strips of vinegar-soaked linen. The dwarf grunted a few words in his harsh language. Catherine tied the bindings off under the dwarf's shoulder and lay back against the bole of a tree, letting the adrenaline drain from him in a series of slow breaths. There was nothing more he could do for the dwarf, and they were still some days from Ragdorf. The dwarf would either live or die on his own terms. Night was coming, and they needed to find shelter. Catherine saw Forester's marks on a nearby tree and dragged the dwarf further into the woods, following the signs towards a sheltered overhang of rock and fallen trees. A fire had been set in this hollow by its previous occupant, a fresh base of kindling and twigs ready for the next traveller to take shelter here. A stack of firewood lay bundled and tied with twine beneath the overhanging lip of a hollow tree. Catherine recognised the style of fire that had been set. Though he had never met the man, he knew him to be a hunter who favoured his right hand and walked with a slight limp. He was a successful hunter, as his footprints, when Cuthwin could find them, were always deeper on the way home than on the way out. Whoever he was, he lived perhaps a day or two from here, somewhere along the high ridges of the southeast. Cuthwin pulled out his tinderbox and got the fire going without difficulty. The hunter had built a good fire, and soon a small blaze was warming their sheltered hollow. With the fire going, he lay back and rested his eyes. He wouldn't sleep, though. With only one of them able to stand guard, it didn't pay to leave their safety during the night to chance. Grindan Deeplock grumbled in his sleep. Yet amid the unintelligible words of his strange language, Catherine heard a few heavily accented words in Reichspiel. One was buried, and he thought the other was organ. That didn't make any sense. Were these dwarfs selling musical instruments? Putting the dwarf's ramblings from his head, Catherine set about restringing his bow and settled down for the night.